Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Federal Courts and Legal Malpractice Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On January 16, 2013, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Gunn v. Minton. The question in this case is whether federal courts have exclusive arising under jurisdiction over a legal malpractice case, ordinarily a state matter, where the sole substantive issue is the application of a patent law doctrine that is an essential element of the underlying legal malpractice claim. To discuss the case, we have Mark Schultz, who is an associate professor of law at Southern Illinois University School of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Schultz.
Last week, the Supreme Court heard oral arguments in the case of Jerry Gunn v. Vernon Minton. The case considers whether the federal courts have jurisdiction over a cause of action created by state law. In other words, the question is, when does a case that asserts a state cause of action nevertheless arise under the federal constitution or federal law, which is the prerequisite to federal jurisdiction? Of course, this general question is not a new one for the court. It's addressed the issue frequently, including in recent terms. The leading precedent on this issue is the 2005 case Gravel & Sons Metal Products Incorporated versus DeRue Engineering, which sets forth what is referred to as the Grabel standard. Under the Grabel standard, the federal courts have subject matter jurisdiction over state law claims when a well-pled complaint includes a substantial contested issue of federal law. This case, Gunn v. Minton, concerns a particular application of the Grabel standard to legal malpractice claims in patent cases. A legal malpractice claim is, of course, a state cause of action. However, malpractice claims related to litigation typically require trying a case within a case to determine whether the lawyer failed to observe the relevant standard of care and thus caused actual harm to the plaintiff. Therefore, in a legal malpractice case addressing patent litigation, the court hearing the malpractice claim must necessarily conduct a hypothetical trial of a patent claim. The specific question, therefore, in Gunn v. Minton, is whether a malpractice claim based on a patent case includes a substantial contested issue of federal law such that the federal courts have exclusive jurisdiction over the malpractice claim. The facts in this case are interesting in part because of the persistence and relentless maneuvering of Mr. Minton and his attorneys. So the respondent Minton hired the petitioner Gunn and his law firm to represent him in the original patent suit, in this case, against the National Association of Securities Dealers. So the case ended poorly for Mr. Minton. His patent was invalidated. So Minton then sued his lawyer Gunn for malpractice in Texas state court. Mr. Minton lost the malpractice claim as well. So then he had the nerve to appeal based on a claim that the state court should not have taken jurisdiction over his malpractice claim. He argued that the suit belonged in federal court because 28 U.S.C. Section 1338 grants the federal courts exclusive jurisdiction over cases arising under patent law. Ultimately, the Supreme Court of Texas agreed, following the Federal Circuit's rule that all such cases must be brought in federal court. The Texas Supreme Court thus remanded the case to the trial court with instructions to dismiss it. Now, the practical effect of this outcome would be to erase Mr. Minton's loss in the state court on the malpractice case, thus allowing him a second bite at the apple to try his malpractice case in federal court. The core of the malpractice claim is that Minton's patent would not have been invalidated if his attorney Gunn had argued what is known as the experimental use doctrine. Section 102B of the 1952 Patent Act invalidates a patent if, among other things, the invention was publicly used or sold more than 1 year before the patent was filed. This was the case with respect to Minton's patent, and so it was invalidated. However, the experimental use exception will excuse public use if such use was made for the purposes of a bona fide experiment, such as to develop, refine, or verify the invention. So Mr. Minton's argument in the legal malpractice case was that Mr. Gunn committed malpractice by failing to raise the experimental use doctrine. In the malpractice case before the Texas State Court, the court did address the experimental use doctrine, but the court made what observers generally agree are some errors. In any event, Minton now argues that the malpractice claim never should have been heard by the Texas State Court. As noted earlier, the Grable standard is the current law governing the arising under doctrine. A court must analyze whether the federal issue is 1. Necessary, 2. Actually disputed, i.e. a contested issue, and 3. Substantial, and then 4. Considering the first three factors, the court should consider whether accepting jurisdiction would disrupt the balance between state and federal judicial responsibilities. So while it seems clear that the resolution of patent issues is necessary to resolving Minton's legal malpractice claim, the focus here is likely to be on further defining the substantial prong of Grable. Under what circumstances are the patent issues in a legal malpractice case substantial? It's also possible that there may be some question as to whether the patent issues are actually in dispute, since the malpractice case addresses a hypothetical case rather than adjudicating actual patent claims. At this point, it's also useful to note that Grable and this entire line of cases addressing the arising under doctrine represent judge-made law. There's little to no congressional guidance on this issue. As Judge Scalia joked during the oral argument of this case, we're making it up anyway, right? So the courts have struggled with this made-up doctrine for years. Long ago, Justice Holmes articulated a bright-line rule regarding arising under jurisdiction in the 1916 case, American Well Works versus Lane and Bowler. Now, coincidentally, the facts of that case involved patent law. There was a state libel claim where the alleged libel was that the plaintiff had committed patent infringement. Justice Holmes established a clear rule, often referred to as the Holmes Rule. A suit arises under the law that creates the cause of action. So, period. Simple rule. Thus, a state malpractice cause of action, a libel claim or other state cause of action stays in state court regardless of any federal law issues in the case. Now, the court did not stick with the Holmes Rule for long. 5 years later, in Smith v. Kansas City Title and Trust, the court rejected the Holmes Rule. In essence, it decided that some state causes of action raised issues that were too important for the federal courts to abstain from federal jurisdiction. It articulated a standard for determining when federal courts had jurisdiction over such cases. In the decades since then, the court has vacillated between the bright-line Holmes Rule and various versions of the standard first articulated in Kansas City Title and Trust. As noted, the current governing law is the Grable standard. Meanwhile, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit has been developing what many see as its own rules regarding arising under jurisdiction. Since the court was established in the early 1980s as the exclusive Court of Appeals in patent cases, the court has taken an increasingly broad view as to what sorts of cases arise under the federal patent law. At this point, the Federal Circuit has what arguably amounts to a bright-line rule, particularly in patent malpractice cases. The federal courts have exclusive jurisdiction, plain and simple, period. Sounds a lot like the Holmes Rule. Now, some argue that the Federal Circuit's jurisprudence on this issue conflicts with the Supreme Court's Grable precedent. Those who have observed Supreme Court patent jurisprudence in recent years will note a familiar storyline. The Federal Circuit has established a bright-line rule where the Supreme Court, in contrast, advocates a standard. Thus, some view this case as yet another episode in the long-running rules-standards feud between the Supreme Court and the Federal Circuit, yet another instance of the Supreme Court taking cert in a patent case to reassert the applicability of a standard in preference to a bright-line rule. That may be the case, but there are other issues in play here, too. Outside of the world of patent jurisprudence, the Grable standard has been criticized. It prompts a great deal of litigation about where to litigate, and courts struggle with its application. At oral argument, the justices seem more concerned with grappling with Grable than with correcting the Federal Circuit. In this case, both parties have adopted the strategy of arguing for categorical rules, although, of course, each signaled that a more restricted holding would be acceptable to win its case, but each side, of course, is looking for a rule that would make it most likely for its client to prevail. Thus, the petitioner, Gunn, the law firm accused of malpractice, contends that all patent malpractice claims belong in state court. While the claim in this case necessarily requires addressing patent issues, Gunn argues that the patent issues are not in contention or substantial because in a malpractice case, patent issues are hypothetical. Mitten can never receive his patent back. Nobody will be adjudicated an infringer. Thus, as Gunn's lawyer said several times, there's no need to make a federal case out of it. Now, of course, the respondent, Mitten, contends that all patent malpractice claims belong in federal court. The argument is based in part on the special nature of patent law. Congress has, of course, signaled that uniformity in patent law is essential, particularly by vesting exclusive jurisdiction in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit over all patent appeals. Mitten also noted that the resolution of the patent issues in this case would not be hypothetical because the standard of care announced in the case would be imposed on patent lawyers who wish to avoid malpractice. So Mitten has raised the specter of 50 different states articulating differing requirements for patent practice that could further differ from the requirements set by federal law, thus creating a fragmented and non-uniform system. Now, at oral argument, Gunn's lawyer, Jane Weber, seemed to have an easier time of it. The justices allowed her to make large sections of her argument without interruption. In a later discussion of the argument, she noted her surprise. Justice also largely allowed her to stay focused on her argument that the patent issues in legal malpractice cases are effectively hypothetical. Now, by contrast, Mitten's lawyer had a much less easy time of it. The justices pointedly questioned the implications of the rule he proposed. How would the court draw distinctions among malpractice cases that address other bodies of law that are exclusively federal? For example, copyright, antitrust, or immigration law. Are all malpractice cases in those areas of law also inevitably and necessarily federal cases? Justices Ginsburg, Kennedy, and Sotomayor all question the potential breadth of Mitten's proposed rule. So if the questioning is any indication, the justices seemed more inclined to be skeptical of Mitten's position. However, seasoned observers of the court's arising under jurisprudence commented that the argument may have simply reflected the court's continuing struggle to define and cabin its own preferred standard announced in Grable. These observers are skeptical that the court is ready to adopt a rule such as the one Gunn proposed, which would keep all patent malpractice cases out of federal court. If the court truly preferred Gunn's position, then it could just as well revert to Holmes's bright-line test, which observers contend is unlikely to happen. However, the court may be equally disinclined to adopt a rule that puts all such cases in federal court. Many predict that regardless of which party wins this particular case, the court is likely to continue to articulate a standard that requires weighing and balancing the facts of each case rather than adopting any bright-line rule.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.